All right, Fritz, we're in Blood and Faith.com. It's Monday, March 4th, 2024. I wanted to answer the question of the why of Christian nations. Why is it important to have a Christian nation? Why can't we just be a secular, you know, all-inclusive, tolerant, diverse, multicultural society? Why a Christian nation? It's a very controversial statement, apparently, when people call for a Christian nationalism, that we would have a Christian nation. And so this, I'm hoping this answers some of the questions for my, especially my evangelical brothers who say, you know, all that matters is that we preach the gospel and get people born again. That's the only thing that matters. This whole stuff about politics and trying to impose a Christian view on society, he says, none of that matters. You guys are wasting your time. So I'm hoping that I can address that and make a little bit of sense about this. And it comes down to this. If you, and I'm going to throw some caveats in here too, but if you grow up in a home and you know your daddy and mommy love you, and every Christmas, you know, you've got a Christmas tree and you've got Christmas carols and you hear about the birth of Jesus Christ, and every Easter you hear about the Easter story and the crucifixion of Jesus Christ and the resurrection from the dead, and you go to church, a nice church on Sunday, and if you go to a school and you've got the Ten Commandments on the walls of the schoolhouse, which I distinctly remember when I was in Aberdeen, Washington, probably around 1970, maybe a little bit before. They just hadn't pulled the Ten Commandments off the wall yet, regardless of what the Supreme Court said. Public high school. Public grade school. Absolutely great. A second grade, maybe? Something like that. Pretty young kid. I still remember that. And if you grow up in a society that has more or less a Christian worldview, let's put it this way, a view of the world that generally is supportive of a belief that God created us and that God loves us, and yet there's a judgment day at the end of the world, and that truth is broadly outlined. It's reflective of the truths in the Bible, honoring your parents, not stealing, having a intact family life. What are the chances of them getting born again somewhere along the way? I would say on average, it's higher than if those children grow up in society with broken families, where they're taught that they are byproducts of time and chance, where they're taught that religion and Christianity is evil, which is what's being taught today, where they're taught there is no right and wrong. I would say on average, you're one kind of society, you're going to have more people converting, getting that personal conversion to Jesus Christ, however you define that. For some people, it's getting born again. For some people, when the adult, they're either going to have an affirmation, a public affirmation of faith, or be publicly baptized and said, no, I am a Christian. I wasn't just raised a Christian, but I am a Christian. So for the people that say, you know, the only thing that's important is this, the personal conversion experience, my justification for building Christian nations is very simple. If you have an environment that's conducive to and supportive of truth, biblical truth, people are going to be much more open to the gospel. I disagree with the idea that it's going to turn them off. Now, that said, caveat said, I want to talk about raising children a little bit. I've raised four kids, all right? I'm not a perfect dad. I love my family more than my own life. I love my family. But the number one thing that your kid needs, and I will flat out tell you this, and I'll just say it from the dad, the kids need to know that their daddy loves them. Your children, your boys, and your girls need to know that their daddy loves them, especially that little girl, but all of them. That your children need to know that no matter how badly they screw up in life, and they will, because I did, probably unlike you, you probably never screwed up in life, but I did. They need to know that their daddy loves them. That their daddy loves them. that their mommy loves them. That has to be the foundation of their development as a human being. Doesn't mean you don't give them a little tap on the bottom with a wooden spoon every once in a while. Doesn't mean you can't tell them they're wrong. Doesn't mean you put up with nonsense. Yeah, it doesn't mean that at all. But they need to know that no matter what, they're loved. And I know Christian families or Christian parents that have treated their kids horribly, treated them horribly. And I know families that aren't Christian at all, and they got wonderful, wonderful, healthy, well-adjusted, beautiful kids. So this isn't, you know, if you're you know, a churchgoer and you're a Christian, you're gonna have a perfect family. Not at all. Not at all. We all got stories about people that are screwed up because their Christian parents were screwed up, and they left some scars on the kids. So that's not it. But just a little tip, man. Make sure your kids know that daddy loves them. All right, I'm just telling you. Even when they go through hard times and they do things that they probably shouldn't have done. They need to know that dad's got their back, that dad loves them. They got to know that. That's free. I'm not going to even charge you for that. But back to the original question. If you build a society that's based on truth and you create a worldview in that society that's supportive of the idea that God created us, that the law of God is the Ten Commandments, that there is a judgment day for all of us, I would suggest to you that you're going to have a higher conversion rate on average over time than in a society that teaches that we're a byproduct of time and chance, that there is no right and wrong, and there is no judgment day. Now, can I prove this? Yeah, I think I can. I think I can prove that in the history of Europe. All right, there's a time in Europe where Europe was the faith and the faith was Europe. It was a Christian society. When you grew up in Christian societies, more or less on average, nobody disbelieved in God. Nobody said, oh, there is no God. That didn't enter into the equation. Everybody understood that there was a God. Everybody understood that there's a creator. Everybody understood that there's a judgment day. Everybody understood that there's right and wrong, and there's good and evil, and you got a conscience, and you're going to be held accountable for it. Everybody understood that. That was kind of where everybody started. Now, they will make choices, and they will do evil, or they will do good, or some combination thereof. But there's a foundation and a belief that we don't propagate anymore. And so when you come and you talk to somebody about, you know, Jesus, and this is before we get into how messed up the church is. Right now we're battling, I mean, kids are indoctrinated from day one, day zero, that there is no, that God is simply an afterthought that somebody thought of to, I don't know, like Mark said, it's the opiate of the masses. That's essentially the worldview that's taught in schools today. That's essentially what it is. And so you're battling all this stuff. Now, can God reach people through that? Of course you can. But why? Why must you insist upon that? And if I go back and I look strictly theologically, I go back and I look in the Bible and say, well, what's the example of the Christian nation of the Bible? It was ancient Israel. No relationship to the current Antichrist entity that exists today. You know that if you've listened to bloodandfaith.com. And the law of God was given to the entire society. It wasn't, hey, you know, you need to have a religiously neutral society. And, you know, if people want to serve God, they can. If they want to believe in God, they can. And if they don't, they don't have to, because, you know, we would never want to impose our religious values on other people, which is kind of, it's kind of the mantra that, that goes around today. And it's and we'll talk about that in a minute because it's not really true. Society's very much as imposes a religious view on people. It's just not the Christian religion. And they can say, well, we're just imposing fact and science, not religion. Well, it's that's a whole nother podcast or three. So when you build a Christian society and you're raising kids in a school system, even if you have public schools, where it's just assumed that God created us, it's just assumed that the Ten Commandments are the moral guide for society, it's just assumed that there will be a judgment day, you've got a good foundation for preaching the gospel. And this is especially to the evangelicals that want that born-again movement. When the time comes for that, when they need to make that personal choice, you're not trying to overcome literally decades of lies and deceit in their life. You're not trying to overcome devastation that happened in the lives of children because Johnny had two daddies. And you're not trying to overcome all the garbage that you get tranny story hour. And today we've reached a point in our society, European societies, where it's become illegal in many countries to simply read what the Bible has to say about many, many different subjects. I've certainly gotten in trouble for reading what Jesus Christ had to say about certain subjects. You can read about it in the newspapers. And all I've done is said, this is what the Bible says. This is what Jesus Christ said out of his own boca, out of his own mouth. And when you're raised, if you have a Christian society, more or less, you're not fighting that stuff. Those are, 15 less demons that you're fighting, and these kids don't have a screwed up psyche because Johnny had two daddies and everything that goes with it. The tranny, on and on and on and on. So for the evangelical, you wonder why you want to create. If your entire measurement is how many people are getting born again, this is a solid argument for building Christian societies. The other solid argument for this is that's what God did with ancient Israel. He says, here's my law. You will serve me. You're going to serve me as a nation or not. But it's not where God says, oh, do you mind? Excuse me. I want to tiptoe into your society, and I'd like it to be able to set up my table and pass out some tracts here, please. Can I do that? That ain't it, buddy. That's not it. No, he says, listen, here's the Ten Commandments. First commandments point directly to him. The him is Jesus Christ, by the way. Different sermon, but the him is Jesus Christ. He says, you shall have no other gods before me. I am the Lord thy God. I brought you up out of the house of Egypt. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. That includes the government. That includes other so-called religions, of which atheism is simply one. It's like, no, this is the law for the entire society. So that's reason number two. This is ancient Israel was to be the guide for all the other nations. And we did this in Europe. After the resurrection of Jesus Christ, Europe becomes converted. You had Christian nations. That's why Sweden and Norway and Scotland and Finland and Iceland have the cross of Jesus Christ on their flags, and many other countries too. Nina, Pinta, and Santa Maria. What was on their on their sails as they went across the oceans? They had big crosses on their flags. Why? They brought the gospel of Jesus Christ to the Western Hemisphere. This is, of course, why Satan hates the white race, because we brought the gospel around the world. We can delve into the idea of where did the 12 tribes of Israel go. My answer is absolutely they went to Europe. No question about that in my mind. Again, another podcast or two. Biblically, we're ordered to build Christian nations. Logically, it only makes sense. If your sole measurement is getting people born again, it only makes sense. It only makes sense. Listen, we're right at the point right now in our country where it's it's very close to becoming illegal to preach the gospel anywhere. Anywhere. Canada's going down that, right? They're proposing life in prison for people that propagate hate speech, of which the Bible is categorized as massive hate speech by many different groups, especially the group that's come after me. And they say it openly in their literature. And some people, they won't say what's been forbidden by the government. They won't do it. Go read the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. You think those were the only three Hebrews in that society at that time? How come only three people refused to bow down? It makes a difference. And what the church has done is surrendered ground generation after generation after generation after generation, to the point where now in many countries, it is illegal to say things out of the Holy Scriptures, because some group is going to get all accusatory and say, well, that's hate speech and discrimination, and it's racist, sexist, homophobic, transphobic, queerphobic, intolerant, divisive, and anti-Semitic. And like I've said, all of the above are true. And that's why you need to throw those terms out. You don't need to justify the Bible and say, well, it's not this, that, or the other thing. You need to say those terms aren't even legitimate. Talking to somebody the other day, I said, look, Europe is being targeted because it is the historical repository of the Christian faith. Fact, full stop. Europe has been targeted for genocide by certain groups of people because it is a historical repository for faith in Jesus Christ. That's why the dragon's coming after the church. And it's been going on for centuries now. The rise of atheism came out of the heart of Christendom. Oh, we call it the Enlightenment. It was a darkening. You abandoned Jesus Christ. Well, look now. You get tranny story hour at your local library. And I pick on that because it's so indefensible. It's so indefensible. There's nothing scientific about that stuff. And then you're going to outlaw the Ten Commandments. You're going to outlaw literally what came out of Jesus Christ's mouth. Building Christian nations, if this is what your measurement is, building Christian nations increases the probability and the likelihood and the certainty that more people are going to get born again and have that personal conversion that the evangelicals are so concerned about. And I've got no issue with that. If you want to have a crop, let's put it this way. If you want to have, let's say you're a farmer. Let's say you have a backyard garden that's 10 feet by 8 feet. And you go out there and it's just a mess. It's rocks, it's weeds. There's, you know, rabbits and rats and there's mice and there's birds. So how am I going to grow anything here? Well, you got to dig it up. You got to pull out the rocks. You got to pull out the weeds. You got to fertilize. You got to water. And it takes time. It doesn't happen overnight. Might take several years. My wife and I built a big, beautiful garden in our backyard. It took years to recondition that soil and get rid of the dead soil and build living soil through a lot of composting and learning how to deal with little critters that came in there and ate stuff up. It took us a long time. But you know what? After a while, we could grow some tomatoes. I'm telling you, we could grow some tomatoes. We grow a lot of stuff out there. But it doesn't happen overnight. It takes time. You have to condition the soil. Jesus Christ talked about this. He talked about this. He said, look, you know, you're out there trying to farm, and you got birds, and you got rocks, and there's no water. And of course you're not going to get a return. You want a return, you got to condition that soil. It takes time, takes work, takes effort. Society is that ground. Society is that ground. And it's part of the Great Commission. It is the Great Commission to build Christian nations. You build Christian society. It takes generations to do this stuff. And oh my, how quickly it can be torn down. You stop tending that garden, you turn away, you walk away from the garden, which is essentially what the church has done. That's exactly what the church has done, because they didn't want to offend certain groups of people. Well, we don't believe it's right to impose our religious views on others. Oh, that's so easy. That's so easy. Let's go back to parenting. I asked dear daughter, this was years ago when she was 14 or 15. She's about that age when they decide they know it all. It's funny how that works for all of us. Get to that age where they decide that they know it all. And I asked her, I said, do you think it's wrong to impose your values on other people? Absolutely. It's absolutely wrong to impose your ideas on other people. It's all right. Well, don't you realize that when you say that, you're imposing your values upon me? She didn't talk to me for 3 days. When you tell somebody you can't impose your values on somebody else, that is an imposition of values on somebody else. Well, I mean religious values. What's a religious value? Is not a practicing sodomy a religious value, or is that just a scientific value? Because scientifically, there's no support for it. Which one is it? Which one is it? Well, if it's wrong to impose your values on somebody else, and you really believe that, the right answer for you is to shut your mouth and go away and let me say whatever I want and impose my values any way I want, because it's wrong for you to impose your values on me. I reject that. I utterly reject every law on the books. It's an imposition of morality. Laws against murder are imposition of morality. When you legalize abortion, you're saying that particular moral law doesn't apply anymore. When you legalize arson and what do you get going on in San Francisco right now? You legalize a theft in stores. That's either an imposition of morality, or it's like, you know what, that's no longer immoral anymore. Every law is a law of morality. Every law is a law of morality. You go into the workplace, it's the most impressive, oppressive regime out there. You can't say this, you can't say that. Well, wait a minute. Who are you to impose your morality upon me? Don't tell me I can't use this word or that word. Don't tell me I can't use a racial epithet anywhere because you're imposing your narrow-minded morality on me. Well, you hurt somebody's feelings. You hurt my feelings when you tell me I can't say something. Now, these are questions that every parent can have with their kids. These are conversations you can have with... You don't need to be a PhD in history to have these conversations with your children. This is just basic, simple stuff. Do you think it's wrong to steal? Yes. Why? I don't know. Have those conversations. Are not laws against theft impositions of morality? And when you go to school and you're told you can't say this and you can't say that, is that not an imposition of morality in somebody else's worldview and indeed their religion? The answer is, of course it is. And all I'm saying is, look, instead of imposing lies on society, impose the truth and truth of the Holy Scriptures. Well, not everybody believes it. Well, not everybody believes that cutting off body parts changes your XY chromosome to an XX. The imposition of a worldview or a philosophy, call it a religion if you want, is non-optional. It's just which one's it going to be? These are themes that need to come through the pulpit too, as well as around your dinner table with your teenagers. What we've done in a post-Christian society, whether it's here in North America or over there in Europe, Australia, New Zealand, is we have essentially gutted Jesus Christ from our race. That's what we've done. We've gutted Jesus Christ from our race. And we are reaping the whirlwind. And there's traitors within helping that to happen. I don't know how many years or how many decades it's going to be. You're not going to be able to preach the gospel to anybody. Unless it's this watered-down Judeo-Christian nonsense. Literally, you can't say the red because a certain group of people are already making it illegal to say what Jesus Christ said in the red. Well, they shouldn't do that. That's a violation of my rights. They don't care about your rights. They're anti-Christ. It's either Christ or Antichrist. There is no third ground. There is no middle way. There's no third path. Love your kids. Have these conversations with them. Talk about these things in the pulpit. Fritz Bergen, BloodandFaith.com.